for the sake of time, we're just going to jump right into providing an overview, and I'll let my distinguished panelists introduce themselves when they come up to the podium to talk about their use case. So again, the three of us, again, Frank Ricotta, CEO of Burst IQ, Wendy Charles with Denver Health and University of Colorado, and Ken Colon with Orderly Health. Okay, blockchain applications. There's a lot of conversation about where blockchain fits in health. And this is just a smattering of a number of use cases that we know there are active projects out in the world in terms of trying to leverage blockchain to solve some of these aspects. And there are a number of solutions in production that cut across a broad spectrum of health. I think it's important to note that health isn't just one segment. Health is a lot of segments, from large hospital systems on one side of life, to doctors, to clinical research organizations, biotech, pharma, supply chain, as well as insurance and the payer side of life. So health is a multi-trillion dollar industry, so lots of opportunity for innovation and improvement. But at the end of the day, what is the foundational problem, at least I think, to usher in the next generation of health? And that is really data. Data is the foundational use case. Everybody talks about data being valuable. Absolutely is valuable. You know, researchers really are demanding more of it. Companies are created every day to generate variations of data about you. And yet we as individuals can't access, don't understand it, let alone can use it each and every day. And let's not forget that it's very valuable. Bad folks think it's very valuable. One out of three individuals in this room probably had elements of their health record compromised over the last couple of years. But the reality to usher in the next generation of health, one that truly is person-centric, that's an everyday, all-the-time thing for care, for health, for life, it's really all about data and creating these longitudinal health profiles of individuals. So with that, I'm going to jump into what is an identity or a health profile. Well, if you think about it, it's not just, you know, your name as an example. There are attestation and attributes about your identity that make up who you are. If you're a doctor or a facility of person, places, and things, it could be an MPI, a government ID, a health record, a bank account, fitness data, and a whole host of other attributes that really make up not only your identity, but your overall health profile. There are three parts to identity, at least to the attributes that are attached to identity. One are claims, and they can be made by the person or the business themselves or the entity, said, this is who I am. Other ones are proofs, which are evidence of that claim. It could be, say, my degree from the university I attended, driver's license, a passport that I provided a copy of to validate who I am. So these are proofs associated with my ID. The third one is attestation, which is validation of the proof. Where did it come from? Did it come from the government? Or in the case of credentialing, say for a physician, do I have a third party validate the proofs and the claims associated with that particular physician? So all three go together to make up an identity, and really it's about what part of the data are you trusting. The other aspect, which is consent, and what aspect of the data I'm going to share and in what capacity and for how long. It could be fully anonymous. So I go to the store as an example and I want to buy a candy bar. I pay with cash. The clerk doesn't know who I am. If I'm buying a car or a house, they want to know a lot about who I am, especially if I'm asking for a loan to purchase that item. And I'm giving you a use case outside of health, but really we should have the ability to control the how our personas are presented out into the world and who can see what. So at the end of the day, it's about granular consent. You know, and we see a lot of legislation really pushing the whole topic of consent and giving the owner of the data or the person more control of who's using their data, particularly on the consumer side of life. And we've had a lot of regulatory oversight in the health, particularly the healthcare side of life, but you're really seeing a lot of this regulatory guidance and push across not just Europe but throughout the United States. So the ability to have a framework and an infrastructure that provides for granular consent and sharing around an identity of a person, place, or thing is pretty important. And this is foundation to a lot of our use cases, at least at Burst IQ. One being EID initiatives in smaller sovereign jurisdictions outside of the United States. We've been teaming with a Know Your Customer and anti-money laundering blockchain company called Shift, and have a number of active deployments underway with them where we're storing the claims and attestations, and they're providing the transactional framework for access to the identity. I'm going to now shift it over to Ken and let him pick it up with blockchain and machine learning for provider data.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Frank. My name is Kenneth Colon. I head up product and marketing at Orderly Health. We're a machine learning startup based in Denver, and we work with health insurance companies to help them improve the accuracy of their provider directories. So as Frank talked about, identity and profiles are a huge challenge for healthcare. And so I want to talk to you today specifically about provider profiles. So when we say provider data, I think it's important to kind of clarify what exactly we're talking about. So when we're referring to provider data, typically we're looking at, say, a provider's contact information. So say phone and address for a primary care provider. We're also talking about their professional information. So their specialty, any certification or license numbers associated with that provider, their network status for a particular insurance company. What networks are they in network with, which insurances do they accept? And lastly, panel status. So are they currently accepting new patients? And this can get a little more granular with this and go down to the level of, are they accepting new Medicare and Medicaid patients? Are they accepting new commercial patients? And so this is kind of what we focus on at Orderly Health. And what is kind of the status quo with provider data currently? So health plans are spending over $2 billion annually trying to solve this problem, and they're not doing a very good job. So according to a recent study by CMS, about 50% or more of provider directories have, 50 or more percent of provider records are inaccurate. So for any particular doctor, there's about a 50-50 chance that one aspect of their record will be inaccurate, whether that's whether they're in network with your insurance, whether that's their contact information. There's a 50% chance that some aspect of their record is inaccurate. As resulting from this, 1 in 7 patients receive a surprise bill due specifically to inaccurate network information. So I've had experienced this personally. You know, you go to a provider, make an appointment, thinking that they're in network. The provider themselves might even say they're in network, but according to the health plan, they're not in network, so you could build the full out-of-network price. So regulators, especially focusing on that surprise billing issue, are starting to crack down on this. So health plans can face not only federal fines of up to $25,000 per beneficiary, they could also receive or be mandated to reimburse patients. So if you unknowingly go to a doctor who is not in network, the health plan might be forced to reimburse you for the cost of that care. There have also been instances of blocks placed on new enrollment. So if a particular health plan's directory is particularly inaccurate, CMS may place a block on new enrollments for that program until their accuracy gets above a certain threshold. So to tackle this at Orderly Health, change the slides here. So to tackle this at Orderly Health, we use a mixture of data and machine learning, essentially. So we source over 1 billion data points from both public and proprietary sources. And we combine that with our proprietary machine learning engine. And what we've been able to do there is deliver accuracy of 90% or more for our health plan clients. So it's taking them from, you know, the average baseline of 50% all the way up to 90 or more. And we're doing this at a 75% or greater cost savings for our health plan clients. This is especially compared to more traditional models of or more traditional methods of validating the data, which is typically things like call centers. But we still faced a lot of issues with that. One of the three big questions we would get from our health plan clients is, how do we securely store this data? How do we manage sharing of this data? And how do we create an audit trail for regulators? That last point is especially critical, as CMS would often go to our health plan clients and ask them, you know, okay, you have this certain level of accuracy, but how do we see how it's changed over time? And so, you know, those areas aren't necessarily you know, areas that we ourselves dabble in, but we recognized that it was really important for the for our health plan clients. And so that's where our partnership with Burst IQ came in. And so Frank and his team at Burst IQ have developed this really robust blockchain platform. And so our companies kind of came together and launched this, this joint solution focused on provider data to address some of those concerns that our health plan clients had. So with the blockchain, you get the security aspect. And on the, you get the security piece, which I think a lot of us here in this room know about the security benefits of the blockchain. With the Burst IQ platform, you get the sharing aspect, so managed consent, so the health plan can manage who has access to that data. Lastly, you get the accuracy piece through our machine learning engine. And then lastly, you get the audibility piece. So every time we're updating a record, we append it to the Burst IQ Burst chain so that regulators at CMS and others can see how the data has been changed and updated over time. And so that does it for provider data. And I will now turn it over to Wendy Charles to talk through data aggregation in clinical health data organizations. Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. I'm Wendy Charles, and it's such a pleasure to be with you today. I have seen many presentations in the past about potential use cases, and so it's a joy for me to talk to you about a case that's in production, very successful, and was huge news in Denver when it was first released. So to start out, give you the setting about this use case, there are three clinical health data organizations in the Denver area that are required to produce quality metrics for state-run federally qualified health programs. So the Colorado Regional Health Information Organization, which I'll call COREO throughout the presentation, is a health information exchange comprised of 5 million individual patients, about 80% of the Denver area, 74 hospitals, and has 12,000 physician users that log in. The Quality Health Network is a health information exchange on the western side of Colorado, which involves 14 hospitals and 95% of the physician providers. And the Colorado Community Managed Care Network is an organization of clinics and about 50% of the Medicaid patients that are served by that network. And there was a need to share these quality metrics with the state of Colorado in an aggregate format from these three organizations. And I don't know about the types of technologies that your healthcare organizations use, but I was speaking with a programmer about 2 weeks ago who said that he serves a hospital in Idaho that prepares its quality metrics using a DOS-based system. So there's real need to have appropriate technology and to have an opportunity to share the aggregated information with the state of Colorado, as well as protecting data confidentiality. And one of the primary goals is to reduce the administrative costs and burdens of aggregating these quality metrics. So in August of 2018, these three data organizations partnered with Burst IQ and put the quality metrics on the Burst IQ blockchain. This particular project was an initiative funded by the Colorado State Innovation Model Program, which itself is funded by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. And this was a first of its kind project and partnership in Colorado. So this slide shows among these organizations that are connected, there's true data liquidity between endpoints, stakeholders, and systems. And it's valuable to note that of the endpoints, it can include data input endpoints as well as data visualization tools. And so how it worked, you're familiar with blockchain, you're comfortable already with the nature of interoperability, but one of the points on this slide that I had wanted to draw attention to is that the data sharing among these health organizations could take place without revealing individual data points to each other. And so the analysis could take place as if all of the data were aggregated, but each individual organization could only see its own information. And as Frank mentioned earlier, one of the features of blockchain that really helps with health information exchanges is the complex ownership and the granular consent. And having come from a background of clinical research, the consent portion is very important to me. And when GDPR was introduced, granular consent was a major component of GDPR because you cannot simply consent to a batch of potential opportunities. You have to be aware of each one individually, or to the degree at least that a reasonable person would make their conclusions. And the blockchain does automate the permissible access and the data uses. So the preliminary results is that it is reducing administrative burdens of aggregating these clinical quality metrics. It's much simpler to extract and report. And of course, using the blockchain and having more control over privacy, there is better confidentiality. So initially, there were some questions about jurisdiction and the need for governance. These are the same types of questions that come up with implementation of many different types of blockchain solutions. And because blockchain is a newer solution to address health information, it was necessary to educate stakeholders and the community about what blockchain is and what it isn't so that they were much more comfortable with the solution. So we see a tremendous amount of future potential beyond the current uses, and part of this will be to create a data ecosystem across other state agencies or health service providers, as well as more consumer-directed data sharing options, as both Frank and Ken mentioned, about giving patients more control. And I'm very hopeful that there will be more opportunities for research and public health surveillance, because if you can perform analyses without access to the individual data points, it provides another layer of confidentiality. And in many other sessions I've heard this morning too, there's a lot of concern about re-identification. And LaTanya Sweeney is a Harvard professor who has done a tremendous amount of re-identification research and showed that even when we think our data sets are de-identified, using the power of much more powerful computing and publicly available records, it is increasingly common to be able to re-identify participants. So the more protections we can put in place for limiting access to the actual data points, the stronger the protections will be. And that's the end of my presentation.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm just gonna wrap it up. I know we focused on a couple of our validated use cases. As I said, we've been in production now for a year and a half. What I wanna emphasize though, it's not about blockchain in reality. Just like any innovation adoption is never really about the technology. It's about what you're enabling your clients to do. Is it doing something new or improving what they're doing or taking costs out of their current operational mode? So when we started down the path and we mentioned blockchain, we got crazy looks. What the heck is that? And then it started to become a word in vogue. And think of the cloud cloud adoption years ago. Are you going to the cloud? Yes, I'm going to the cloud. Where's the cloud? I don't know where the cloud is, but I'm definitely going to be on the cloud at some point in time. So that's where you see a lot of the traditional health clients really sit today. They know it's important. They know potentially can change things for them, but when you start wrapping solutions around it and making the blockchain stuff easy and solving real problems that can't be solved with traditional technologies, you'll get it out of the spectrum of somebody saying, well, why is it different than a database? They'll start seeing the potentials and the opportunity to change what they're doing and to create even new revenue or care models. And I think that's what we're really all about. So again, make it simple for people. You know, in my view, hide the technology of blockchain, the geeks will get it, but you really want the business users to get it. Hey, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate everything, and have a great afternoon.
The 2019 Converge to Accelerate conference is brought to you by IEEE, the world's largest technical professional organization for the advancement of technology, Boehringer Ingelheim, passionately working to improve healthcare. NASCO, advancing digital